Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
We're fighting to restore America's energy independence, and that includes biofuels.
In a rare mention by either side of agriculture, that's Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds with the Republican response to the president's State of the Union address.
We're getting people back to work, not paying them to stay home. Most of all, we're respecting your freedom. Behind me stands Iowa's Capitol, where we display our state motto, our liberties we prize and our rights we will maintain. And those aren't just empty words. It's a belief that the greatness of this state and this country lies in our people, not government.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Today's hearing is an important opportunity for us to, first of all, reflect on our commodity programs in our 2018 Farm Bill and gather input from key stakeholders on what is working and what is not working.
With that, the chairman of the House Ag Committee from Georgia, David Scott, opening a hearing to review the Farm Bill. Now, the ranking member from Pennsylvania is G.T. Thompson.
Chairman Scott, thank you for convening this hearing today and giving the members of this committee the opportunity to hear directly from these representatives of the commodity organizations regarding Title I of the Farm Bill. We have 19 months before the 2018 Farm Bill expires, but before we can begin thinking about the 2023 reauthorization, we must first have a thorough understanding of how current policy is performing, and we kick that audit process off here today. I want to thank the witnesses who agreed to participate in this hearing, as well as the organizations they represent. Unfortunately, in the past, we have seen what can happen to the Farm Bill when there's divisiveness and a lack of consensus among key stakeholders, such as during the process leading up to the 2014 Farm Bill, which ultimately took over 3 years and a lot of ups and downs before it was enacted. Compare that to the 2018 Farm Bill, which may have been tumultuous at times, but it marked the first time in almost 30 years that a Farm Bill was introduced in both chambers and enacted into law within one calendar year. Plus, the conference report was passed by a record margin in both the House and the Senate. From my perspective, the key difference that led to the success in the 2018 Farm Bill was that the commodity organizations were all rowing in the same direction. During the development of the 2023 Farm Bill, there may be some differences of opinion along the way, but I'm hopeful and I challenge all of our key stakeholders to make sure that they're unified as we fight back against the critics of farm policy. Our farmers are the lifeblood of the rural economy, and having a reliable domestic source for our food is a matter of national security. Yet those who are not involved in agriculture likely don't comprehend the enormous risks that our farmers and ranchers take on year in and year out to ensure that there's food on the shelves. The disruptions from the COVID-19 pandemic opened many Americans' eyes to the importance of reliable food production. And while for the average consumer, things may have somewhat returned to normal, for our farmers, it's anything but. They are facing unprecedented disruptions in the supply chain for critical inputs, skyrocketing energy costs, and difficulty transporting their commodities. Though there is no silver bullet, the safety net is intended to help absorb some of the risk our farmers face. And I look forward to an honest conversation about how Title I is performing in that regard. I hope the members of this committee walk away from this hearing with a thorough understanding of what is working and what needs improving. The path to success in any Farm Bill reauthorization begins on the front end with hearings like this. The primary responsibility of the organizations represented here is to provide the key input Congress needs to get the policy right. Each Farm Bill is different, and each one comes with its own unique challenges. It is critical at this stage of the game for stakeholders to give us an honest assessment of where we stand, and moving forward to focus on developing the safety net our producers need rather than trying to dictate the process.
It's Agriculture Today.
On the phone with Joe Guzman, Director of Sales for Equinom Smarter Sesame. Joe, 2022's here. You have lots of opportunities in sesame.
That's right, Stephen. We have grain handlers with 2022 agreements ready to be signed. Smarter Sesame makes a great rotational crop for producers who are planning for the new crop and season. With inputs on the rise, Smarter Sesame is a great choice for low input acres.
Joe, if somebody wants to find out more, how can they do that?
They can call 1-833-SESAME or visit equinom.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
This is Agriculture Today.
So your feed cost impacts is the reason I highlight that.
Dr. Glenn Tonser is a Kansas State livestock economist.
Some quick context on meat demand implications. So Russia itself is not a major importer these days. Part of that, those that are, you know, gray and older like me, who might remember in the past, poultry was an area where Russia imported a lot from the U.S., I think 5 or more years ago before that's really been the case. Since then, there's been a lot of quote-unquote self-sufficiency efforts by Russia to produce their own protein. So there's not this, let's call it direct impact on meat demand to be aware of. But I think there's a very important indirect one. And anytime you have an event like this, and I hope it ends soon and doesn't go further and so forth like everybody, but I have no idea when it's going to end and how long it's going to go on, it definitely magnifies everything in the geopolitical, global economic, broader macroeconomic, consumer confidence arena. And there's a lot of stuff related to that, right, that at the end of the day, meat demand is stronger when consumers are confident, if they think they live in a safe world, if they think their incomes are going to go up, if they don't think inflation is going to erode their wages and so forth. Those are all good for meat demand. And we definitely have elevated uncertainty on all of those fronts in the last, you know, 4 to 5 days. As I said, I hope that slows down some. Perhaps my biggest concern that gets beyond just sitting here today is there's been undercurrents, and globally, I'd argue, certainly here in the U.S. and in Russia, as evidenced by this and so forth, that are a little bit more hunkered down, a pushback on globalization, is the way I would describe it, questioning the role of country A exporting, country B importing, and so forth. For livestock producers listening to this, we need to be very aware that a lot of the growth opportunities ahead in years ahead and a lot of the reasons for improving prices the last few months, and actually I go back even longer than that, have to do with strong meat exports. So beef exports, pork exports, poultry exports, depending on what species we're talking about. And I have a notable concern that if the world sort of hunkers down and just stays at home, like each country does that, we sort of disconnect in the trade context. One way to think about it is the ceiling of possibilities for your market shrinks. By USMEF's estimates for 2021, about 22% of the value tied to our fed steers was tied to exports. Now, that's not 22% of the tonnage. It's 22% of the value. And that really reveals the key point is you're finding a market for products that are more valuable than staying here at home. And as we anchor back down, as we kind of hunker down, you, if you like, you lose access. Maybe just by choice, you lose access to some of those markets. And pretty much by definition, that devalues the carcass and therefore the steer and ultimately therefore the mama cow and the whole industry. So my concern is certainly I would like for the Russia-Ukraine thing to be resolved peacefully and quickly, 100% with most of the world in that. The economist in me says there could be these adverse long-term spillover hunker down mentalities that aren't friendly to trade. And that's not good to a major ag exporter like the U.S.
At the end of the day, though, Tonser says volatility is here.
The European stock market is being hammered. Oil is up. It's ongoing impacts from the Russia-Ukraine story. There's a notable global effort to basically reduce the ability for Russia to conduct business, financially tying their hands, so to speak. That's the most simple way I know to put that. The market's going to struggle with that for a couple days. That still might be the right thing in the grand scheme. I'm not saying it's wrong, but I think we're all going to keep watching exactly what happens, right, if Kiev is taken and if it stops there and so forth, and if Russia is deterred at some point or not. The story for this week starts there, and I can't predict when that's going to stop. But the markets this morning are showing elevated turmoil because they don't handle that uncertainty very well. I would anticipate the cattle market, maybe even the grain market, to bounce a lot in the next 2 or 3 days.
Right. That's Kansas State livestock economist Dr. Glenn Tonser. It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com and texascrp.com, to view many properties we have currently listed in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Give us a call at 800-933-9698 to discuss these properties in detail. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Every drop counts. Introducing the Patriot 50 Series Sprayer from Case IH that puts every drop of product exactly where you want it. Enhanced LED lights, a cab designed for all-day comfort, and more precise spraying technology. Because just like you, we know every drop counts. Visit your local Wiley implement for details on the new Patriot 50 Series Sprayer.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We've been talking a lot about the drought in South America.
That's USDA Chief Economist Dr. Seth Meyer at the recent USDA Ag Outlook Forum.
I think, again, the U.S. corn market, given actions perhaps on grain markets overnight, on news in Eastern Europe, is that the market will again be sensitive to developments in global grain markets. One of the key ones will be the prices that have supported South America's, Brazil's second crop corn. I think, unlike last year when we got together and talked about this, when the corn was going in slow, and you can see there last year that it was the slowest in a long time, it's been going in a rapid pace in South America. Today, the economics are favorable to do so, and so we will observe that crop. Normally speaking, the key element here is how long the rain lasts in South America and whether or not it will support that corn's development. That crop tends to come off just as enter the world market just as our own harvest gets underway. So the market will focus on this as it begins to focus on our own planting progress. And I think the other element that we'll hear a lot more about, and I'm really excited to hear the Secretary both engage his guests today on trade with China, because I think when we observe one of the strengths in corn over the last 12 to 18 months, it's been China's wading into the global corn market and its focus on corn, which tends to favor the United States. We've seen them come into the market in the past for grains, say back in 2015, but this period it's both larger and very corn focused, which tends to benefit our own producers. Okay, and then I think we also want to at least discuss quickly the RFS. And I'm not suggesting that this is a I think that there is a lot of nuance here that we have to consider about where demand falls by changes in the RFS. But I will note that when you look at the proposed RFS today and one thinks back at history, one will note that, we often talk and folks talk about 15 billion gallons means 15 billion gallons when it comes to biofuel. But I would say past actions on small refinery exemptions have meant 15 billion gallons, really hasn't meant 15 billion gallons in the past. And the new proposal by EPA suggests maybe for the first time that we'll actually have a point where 15 billion gallons is the mandate which is in place. Because I'll note, when you look at the proposed rule by EPA, that's the graph on the right, you've seen that the mandate as enacted or as published has been higher than has actually taken place for the last several years.
When we focus on meat processing,
We've seen some large swings in both wholesale pork and beef prices, and those have transmitted into retail prices. Note here that this is an index, right? They're not price levels, they're indexes. So you see changes in the wholesale level tend to be muted at the retail level because there are other things in terms of cuts and packaging and retailing that go on between wholesale and retail pricing. But what you can see is that eventually wholesale prices make their way into retail, and eventually, as wholesale prices decline, they make their way back out of retail and those prices come down. And so after we've seen some of these surges in wholesale prices, we've seen retail prices back off. And in some of the latest CPI reports, as we look at food price inflation, you'll notice some of the early price inflation for meat has begun to pull back a little bit, especially in things when you think about beef.
From USDA's Ag Outlook Forum, Seth Meyer, Chief Economist, USDA. It's Agriculture Today.
One of the directors of feedlot operations here at Freona Industries, it's important for us to be partner with people that understand the business and understand the challenges we face. And as we've grown from 4 to 6 to 8 yards, Capital Farm Credit has been there every step of the way. They understand the agriculture industry, understand the ebbs and flows, the trends, the economics, but more importantly, understand the cattle feeding sector and have been extremely good partners for us to work with. And hopefully that partnership gets to solidify even more.
For years, Texas cotton growers have had a trusted partner when it comes to choosing their varieties. Next Gen brand cotton seed from America. Next Gen varieties bred specifically for West Texas growers have performed year after year, even in harsh conditions. And for this year's season, there are several new Bolgard 3 Extend Flex varieties available. Contact your local Next Gen representative or dealer today to learn more about varieties suited for your needs. Next Gen, your West Texas partner for performance cotton seed.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Now, lately, there's been a lot of conversations surrounding agriculture and climate change. And these are conversations that I welcome, as American agriculture has a great story to tell. And we got to get better at telling our story. But often I hear questions about climate framed in a manner that asks, how can we change the safety net or crop insurance to be more climate friendly? And I think that's looking at the problem completely the wrong way.
Ranking member of the House Ag Committee, G.T. Thompson from Pennsylvania.
Rather, we should be asking ourselves, what can we do to make climate policy farmer friendly? American producers are some of the most efficient, well, they are the most efficient in the world. And if the goal is to reduce global greenhouse gas emissions, then the smartest thing we can do from a climate standpoint is, quite frankly, to have American farmers, ranchers, and foresters produce more and export it overseas. And the farm safety net is critical to helping our farmers manage risk year after year. Now, for anyone who wants to jump in, can you talk about the importance of the safety net and maintaining domestic food production? And for your commodity, what other countries are major producers and how do they stack up from a conservation and a climate standpoint?
Former USDA economist and now with the American Sugar Alliance, Dr. Rob Johansson.
I had the privilege of chairing the Federal Crop Insurance Corporation Board of Directors previously when I was at USDA. And I do think that crop insurance needs to focus on providing risk management to farmers. The program obviously needs to be actuarially sound based on principles of insurance. USDA can certainly work to incentivize producers to reduce or sequester greenhouse gases, but that is best addressed through conservation programs. And at least that is by and large how USDA has proceeded thus far, with one exception, maybe the crop insurance discounts for planting cover crops. Generally, when it comes to the commodity title or crop insurance programs, USDA has properly stuck to the mission of those programs. And we certainly know that the increase in productivity in U.S. agriculture across all of our crops and the levels of efficiency seen in our farms have significantly reduced emissions per unit of output over time. As I mentioned earlier, obviously the sugar program is critical to keeping U.S. sugar production viable for our growers. We've seen excessive subsidies provided by other countries to their sugar sector, which effectively guarantees surpluses are dumped on the global market. Moreover, the production in most of those countries does not meet the labor and environmental standards we have in the U.S. So weakening sugar policy and outsourcing more of our sugar production to heavily subsidized global sugar markets would undercut our supply chains, weaken national security, hurt the environment, and cost us family farms here in the U.S.
Chris Edgington is an Iowa farmer president, National Corn Growers Association.
We've been this way for quite a while that crop insurance is number one. It is our number one best risk management tool, and we need to continue with that. It's a vital piece. We are rolling out another, or you know, we've worked with RMA to do another one coming this year called PACE, which looks at split nitrogen application. And if you can't get it on, is there a crop insurance piece to that? And there will be. But we've also got, and we rolled it out last summer, our corn sustainability policies, where we know by 2030 that we can improve things, you know, on land use efficiency, water quality, you know, all of these over, there's 4 or 5 products up to 10-15%, and maybe some of them beyond that. But that's a piece about conservation that we're working on, and it's about efficiencies and quality and all of the dynamics that we on a day-to-day basis. We have corn, you know, all over the United States. And to talk about climate and risk management tools in the same package and have to be done this way does not fit well with corn. It's tough to do the same thing in southern Texas as it is in northern Minnesota or in the state of Washington versus Maine, let alone central Iowa. And so it's an area that we want to keep separate from the fact that risk management is risk management, conservation is conservation, and we are working very hard in both areas to improve and become more efficient as crop producers.
It's Agriculture Today. If you don't push yourself, how will you know what you're really made of? Cotton Research and Promotion Program works to develop innovative performance technologies that redefine cotton's capabilities and helps athletes push themselves further. Cotton Incorporated is working hard to educate consumers about cotton's versatility, especially in the athletic apparel market. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
Like West Texas weather, times can change in an instant, but one thing remains the same. Agriculture will continue to be an indispensable part of our daily lives. South Plains Implement has been your deeply rooted and stable provider of John Deere equipment, parts, and service throughout West Texas and New Mexico for the past 40 years, and we aren't going anywhere. To become a member of our team, visit our careers page, southplainsimplement.com. South Plains Implement, where farm meets family.
This is Agriculture Today.
This month's survey was conducted from February 14th through the 18th. That was just days prior to Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
And that's the director of Purdue University Center for Commercial Ag, Dr. Jim Mintert, with details on the most recent Ag Economy Barometer.
The Ag Economy Barometer rose 6 points this month to a reading of 125, up from 119 last month, and that puts the barometer right back where it was in December. This month's small rise in the barometer was entirely attributable to an improvement in the Index of Future Expectations, which rose 10 points from a reading of 112 to 122 this month. The Index of Current Conditions was essentially unchanged with a reading of 132. The Farm Financial Performance Index this month was unchanged from last month, still down substantially compared to where it was in December, as producers continue to expect 2022 to give a weaker financial performance for their farms than they saw in 2021. The Farm Capital Investment Index declined 7 points this month to a reading of 42, down from 49 last month. And the farm capital investment arena continues to be plagued by supply chain issues. Over 40% of producers in this month's survey said their purchase plans are being impacted by low farm machinery inventory levels.
Mintert also talks about some of the expectations by farmers for the 2022 growing season.
Producers continue to tell us they're having difficulty procuring inputs for the 2022 crop. 30% of the crop producers in this month's survey said they had difficulty purchasing crop inputs for the 2022 season. That was down slightly from December when the percentage was 39% that had difficulty. When we followed up and asked producers about which inputs they were having difficulty with, it was across the board. They continued to have trouble with herbicides, insecticides, fertilizer, and farm machinery parts. Nitrogen fertilizer prices in the Corn Belt have tripled since this time last year. So we continue to ask producers how they're going to respond to that and ask them, compared to the nitrogen rate they applied to their corn in 2021, what are their plans for 2022? Roughly one-third of the producers in this month's survey said they plan to reduce the nitrogen application rate for corn in 2022 compared to 2021. Producers remain optimistic about farmland values. The long-term farmland value expectation index rose 9 points this month to a reading of 154, up from 145 last month. That's still 7 points below where it was last fall when it reached its record high of 161. Each winter, we ask producers about their expectations for how rapidly their farm might grow over the next 5 years. Over half, 53% of the producers in this month's survey said they do not expect their operation size to increase over the next 5 years. 19% of producers expect their farm's growth rate to range from 5 to 10% per year. And 18% say their farm is going to grow at a relatively slow rate of less than 5% per year.
As part of the monthly Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer, Mintert says they asked about rural broadband.
There have been a number of legislative proposals at both the state and national level regarding the need to improve internet access in rural areas. So in this month's survey, we asked producers to describe their farm's internet access in terms of its quality. 30% of the producers in this month's survey said that they had high-quality internet access. 41% characterized their internet access as moderate quality. 16% said it was poor quality. And 12% said they actually don't have any internet access.
Director of the Center for Commercial Ag at Purdue University, Dr. Jim Mintert. And this is Agriculture Today.
Aqua Yield Regional Agronomist Dr. Tracy Carrillo talks about using NanoPro to improve your burn down.
NanoPro is a nanoliquid technology that grabs the molecules of your burn down herbicides. It enhances the delivery of your herbicides, making them more efficient. You oftentimes see a 3-to-1 return on investment. This will stretch your chemical use up to 30%, which means you're saving more money, especially with the availability and volatility of chemicals these days.
Find out more at aquayield.com.
Now is the time to sell. Demand for used equipment is high, and Purple Wave Auction can help you reach the largest community of online buyers. Whether you have a single item or an entire fleet, Purple Wave Auction offers a hassle-free way to sell your equipment. Visit purplewave.com. Straight. Simple. Sold.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
USDA has undertaken efforts to streamline the acreage reporting process for producers who participate in the Title I commodity programs and federal crop insurance.
It's Illinois Representative Sherry Bustos at a recent House Ag Committee hearing to review the Farm Bill.
Has this streamlining initiative worked, and has the reporting process been simplified for producers? And Mr. Doyle, you first, please.
So, you know, I think COVID has put us in a challenging year for the last couple of years, so we haven't had a lot of face-to-face conversations in the FSA office. Anything that makes reporting easier, more accurate, less redundancy, I think will help us enter the programs that we so need to more efficiently and effectively. So I would say the verdict's still out for us, but I applaud the improvements to reporting.
Yeah, I agree with him on that. And, you know, one of the areas that I think we've been challenged on, and COVID's been trying to maybe show us some things to work on, is the age grouping that we have with farmers and how they're comfortable in reporting. There's a generation just a little bit older than Brad and I there's days I'm not very comfortable with a computer, but I certainly do better than the generation that's thinking about retiring. And so they're struggling, whether it's with their crop insurance agent or with the FSA office. And them not being able to go into the offices has been a real hindrance. They've worked their way through it. Our offices, at least in my area, have been very flexible in trying to help people, whether we've done things online or other ways. But we're making strides. We love technology. Right up until we got to use it to give reports, it seems like. And so we'll get there, and we're getting better, but I think there's always room for a little bit of improvement.
Okay. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more question, and this will be for the panel, so whoever wants to jump in, a broad question. I know the perspectives on ARC and PLC over the past couple of years have varied depending on the commodity. So as this committee continues our oversight work and looks ahead to the next farm bill, what are the metrics that we all should use when we evaluate the effectiveness of our existing programs? And maybe we'll have one of the other people start first, and then anybody else who'd like to chime in.
I think we definitely need to address reference price, because it's been mentioned several times here. But it's also important to remember that we don't want reference price to dictate the planted acres. We want to use it as the safety net, but we don't want it to drive or change our decisions from year to year. We want to use it as a tool.
Yeah, that's a great question, Congresswoman Bustos. I would say, at least from the sugar perspective, certainly looking at loan rates and how closely aligned they are with our cost of production would be another metric to look at.
But Madam Congresswoman, I think one of the things in the wheat industry we would like to do, we work on such thin margins, and we don't necessarily want to make a bunch of money, but we want to at least try to break even on these safety net programs and try to keep our family farms in business. So I guess I would look at definitely the bottom line of how much do we make or how much don't we make, and how we plan for our risk management process. In my area, we have 6 inches of rainfall a year. Last year, I didn't harvest a third of my farm. And so I had to utilize the safety net of crop insurance, and it was there. And I'd have to say it's kept the family farming business.
It's Agriculture Today.
When it comes to farming in dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
What can you get for 2 cents these days? How about new, more efficient wheat varieties? Better market access for Texas wheat producers and increased demand to your product. Each year, the Texas Wheat Producers Board achieves these goals by investing producer contributions to promote wheat through research, education, and market development. Who knew 2 cents could be so valuable? A message from the Texas Wheat Producers Board.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
When corporations have to compete, their profits go up and your prices go up when they don't have to compete. Small businesses and family farmers and ranchers, I need not tell some of my Republican friends from those states. Guess what? You got 4 basic meatpacking facilities. That's it. You play with them or you don't get to play at all. And you pay a hell of a lot more. A hell of a lot more because there's only 4.
Remarks from President Joe Biden during his State of the Union address.
See what's happening with ocean carriers moving goods in and out of America. During the pandemic, about half a dozen or less foreign-owned companies raised prices by as much as 1,000% and made record profits. Tonight, I'm announcing a crackdown on those companies overcharging American businesses and consumers.